it's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
It's Steve Bloomers Washing, the Independent Derby County podcast. A belated Happy Easter from all of us at SPW Towers after a potentially season-defining bank holiday weekend where the Rams were unbeaten, but also underwhelming. When you rack up 28 shots on goal in one game, that's a shot almost every 3 minutes. You'd normally expect 3 points, but in some worrying echoes of the early season, where we went game to game, basically inventing new ways not to find the back of the net. It was once again a frustrating finale as MK Dons took advantage of Derby's spectacular wastefulness to poach an unlikely point. The current pessimism might seem a bit of an overreaction, really, for any neutral looking at the League One table. Derby County are, after all, level on points with sixth-placed Bolton at the moment, but the manner in which we're dropping points, the form of teams around us, our relative lack of goals and downturn in form since February mean it would take an extremely optimistic Rams fan to back us to win at Wembley right now. I'm your host, Chris Parsons. Kutch and Fallows are here with me for episode 155 of SBW. Kutch, mate, I've just been basically comfort eating Easter eggs for the past hour to cope with that result. How on earth did we not win there?
Yeah, no, shocking. I actually missed the first 10 minutes. And so I saw the pure domination of that first half. And then when I watched the highlights at halftime, I saw even more chances that I'd missed in those first 10 minutes. I think I even missed Collins when he hit the post. So yeah, I mean, it should have been game over at halftime, and there have been other games this season where we have managed to do that. And you know, if you got a second goal in that first half, I think it probably is over, because Milton Keynes didn't really even come back into it a great deal in the second half. They had kind of had that one chance and scored it. So extremely wasteful. But then the longer the game went on, I thought the less likely we looked like getting a second goal. So yeah, extremely frustrating, because after Friday and then looking at the next four fixtures particularly, yeah, we could have really put a winning run together, but yeah, need to step it up again in the weekend.
Blake, it's pretty hard not to feel really despondent after that, isn't it? And deflated, as you said, just before we started recording. I mean, can you make a case for this Derby County team that they can still get promoted at this point? Seventh on goal difference right now.
Yeah, it's not over, is it? But deflated is the word of the day. I mean, I don't think I felt like this all season. And to sum it up, I was having conversations with Mick Darby, who I sit next to at Pride Park at half time, and it was a case of, let's go and get four or five now, and that will be like an extra point. And I think that sums up the dominance of Derby in the first half. I mean, how many times have we said it, that first half we look like that, we're going to win 4-5 nil. Milton Keynes looked one of the poorest sides that have come to Pride Park this season. Chance after chance, and second half, it's just a different story, and it's becoming quite frustrating. And I mean, look, I'm philosophical about it. I know some people don't like the look where we were a year ago kind of angle, but we do need to look at the squad, the depth of the squad. I think that's not particularly helping us, but today was particularly deflating. I mean, if you'd have said to me at half time, this is going to be 1-1, I think I'd have laughed, because it was just so dominant. And yeah, I'm really, really deflated today, and I've not felt this for a long time.
I think you said it there, Blake, that MK Dons did look like one of the worst teams to come to Pride Park, yeah, particularly in the first half. They weren't much better in the second. We just got worse, I thought. But they were really bad. I mean, Harahan looked good, Corey Smith looked really good, but they were kind of playing in an armchair because there was MK Dons were really sitting back deep. There's no press on the midfield at all. And you can't really fault them too much, the Derby players in that first half, because they did create all those chances. And another day, three or four of them do go in. But they were a really poor team, MK Dons. And they did maybe threaten a little bit on the break in the first half. There's a few warning signs they went through. I think just after Nat had been through and I think hit it straight to the keeper, MK Dons broken us straight away in that first half. And I think they got caught offside, which was a decent chance if they managed that better. So the warning signs were there. But yeah, the longer it went on, the more comfortable I thought MK Dons looked. And the changes, you know, Bird didn't have much of an impact. Dobbin didn't have much of an impact. I think Blake's right. The lack of options is just, it's just hurting us.
Yeah, a few 5-word reviews then from our followers on Twitter. How would you sum up Derby County 1, MK Dons 1 in 5 words? Loads of responses, as we usually get after a disappointing result. Robert said, it was always going to happen. Chris Rowe said, Judge won in a year. Derby Boy said, second half non-existent again. Ben said, wasteful Derby, pay the price. Vicky B said, can't play for 90 minutes. Chris Marson said, same thing happens every week. O_DTFC said, throwing myself in the Derwent. But, you know, calm down, steady on. what else we got? Cash said, played brilliantly, lacked an edge. And Nikki B's and Chris Smith also made the point of, didn't replace Asula in January, maybe one to revisit in a second. But yeah, I watched the Sky Sports highlights just before we came on, and the clip is 1:42 long. But in that, they still managed to squeeze in both goals, a penalty appeal, and 5 more missed Derby chances, which speaks volumes about just how profligate Derby were in that game. I mean, a few people mentioning the penalty appeal, Kutch, it didn't look like one to me. And we're going to come on to officiating in general in the second half, but we can't blame the ref, can we? It's when you have 28 attempts on goal at home against a team who are 19th, who you've already beaten once this season and don't win, you've only got yourselves to blame. So I guess, how does it affect the promotion picture, Kutch, do you think? Like, the remaining games, Peterborough on a pretty decent run at the moment. They won at the weekend. Derby hanging on to the coattails of Bolton only because of Cambridge's injury time equaliser away at Bolton on today, Easter Monday. But the remaining games, Bolton do have a game in hand, so they've got 6. They've got Oxford away, Burton away, Shrewsbury at home, Accrington at home, Fleetwood at home, Bristol Rovers away. Quite hard to really detect how they'll get on in those. Peterborough 5 to play. Cambridge away, Accrington away, Ipswich at home, Bristol Rovers at home, Barnsley away. Is that a local derby? Let's say it is. Then 2 really tough games, Ipswich and Barnsley. And then Derby, of course, 5 to play. Bristol Rovers away, Exeter away, Burton at home, Portsmouth at home, Sheffield Wednesday away. Crucially, Kutch, I'm not really sure I could guarantee how many points Bolton and Peterborough are going to pick up in those games, but I don't really back us to win more than 1 or 2 at most of our remaining 5 either. It's really, really touch and go at the moment, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. I think, you know, well, it's hard to look at the fixtures because we've looked at some kind fixtures coming up for us before, particularly home games in the last couple of months, and it hasn't gone the way we would have expected. We would have expected to win today. We probably should have won today. You expect us to beat Burton at home, but we know what our record like is against them in the last few years. Exeter and Bristol Rovers away both look like tricky away days at the way we're playing. So I think all those run-ins sound kind of similar, or, you know, similar in quality. I think everyone's got a couple of tricky games and a few games we'd be expected to win. For me, it's kind of, I know mathematically it's not in our hands, but if we actually did go on a run, I think we'd get it. I think Bolton and Peterborough aren't going to win all their games. So I can see us still sneaking the playoffs. I can't see us doing anything in the playoffs. So I think we could still get in there. No, Bolton aren't exactly convincing right now. You say, obviously, that they were just a couple of minutes away from winning, but that's only 1 win in 5 for them, similar to us. So I think it's probably between Derby and Bolton for that sixth place. I think Peterborough on a decent run, and yeah, that could still, they could still fall off, but they don't look like they're going to fall off at the moment. When we played them a few weeks ago, I thought they looked pretty good.
Blake, I can't believe I'm actually saying this 2 months after a 15-game unbeaten run ended, but like, we have to talk about what would happen if Derby don't go up at this point. We literally did podcasts about 6 weeks ago saying, would this season be a failure if we don't finish in top six? It now looks more likely than not that we won't, I feel, just because of, well, what I've said in the past 5 minutes. But you have to come back to David Clowes' five-year plan, which was establish Derby in the Championship within 5 years. And I just mentioned that because I saw a message from one of our patrons, I think it's Stephen Bosworth, who said, like, he doesn't fancy us to go up this season, but that might be a blessing in disguise in the long run. I mean, how would you feel if we didn't go up this year, or if we didn't even make it in the top six?
No, I wouldn't be overly disappointed. I think I agree with the sentiment that we're going to battle in the summer to try and get some of the restrictions lifted. That will help us, one, bring in the players and build the squad that Warren wants. Obviously, these aren't, the majority of these players aren't Paul Warren's players. And if we can go out and spend a little bit of money, maybe we'll be stronger next season, and then in a position after next season to be better equipped to go into the Championship. So I don't think it's a failure. And sometimes it's frustrating when you hear that, well, we've got to remember where we were this time last year, in this time, January, February last year. And at some point we've got to stop saying that and look to the future, haven't we? But it's really not the end of the world for me. If Derby are a top eight club in League One this season, would we have taken that at the start of the season? Maybe. We've shown some encouraging signs. And I think it's something that could be built on for next season. It's not a massive failure. I think I'm with you, Chris, where I'm not overly confident of the playoffs now. Just looking at it on paper, I mean, a lot can happen. And it only takes for us to go to Bristol and Exeter and go and get back-to-back wins, and a couple of results go for us, and we're favourites again, aren't we? But I don't think it would be a failure for us to have one more season in League One and really start to build and be stronger, because the last thing I'd want is to go back into the Championship and have a season that we've had previously in Premier League seasons, where you're probably going to see us win one or two away, or do you know what I mean? Have a poor season. I mean, that might not happen, but it'd be nice to really put a squad together that the manager believes in. He's done it before. He knows what he wants. So maybe it is a blessing in disguise. Maybe Stephen's hit the nail on the head there, I think.
Yeah, I mean, Kutch, the thing is about the current mood around the club is it's all relative, isn't it? Like, we started the season in a mediocre fashion. Warren came in. We were on an amazing run in the mid part of the season. And now, like, the wheels have come off, or it's starting to look that way, and we're just running out of steam, like, however you want to describe it. But if those things had happened in a different order, and Warren had come in, had a pretty ordinary start, and then December, we'd have gone on a huge run, which only ended like 2 weeks ago, that there's no way that the current mood would be as it is now, would it? Like, if we'd have started the season, if we'd have finished the season incredibly strongly, but still finished eighth, the mood would be considerably different than if we'd, you know, like, had a great middle part of the season and then dropped off. Or maybe that's, I don't know, maybe that's too simplistic, but it's just difficult not to feel despondent because of where we were for 4 months, and because we were contenders for 4 months, and because we were almost chasing the automatics for 4 months. So it's more about where we've come from than where we are now, isn't it?
Yeah, I agree with that. I was thinking in something similar earlier today, Chris, in terms of the order of things. You know, if it had taken Warren longer to get his feet under the table in his playing style, but then they clicked in, you know, January and gone on a run, it could be very different, because you could actually sneak into the playoffs at that point, and then you're in a form team. So, and you'd have a real bounce going into next season, rather than currently we're kind of limping into next season the way it looks. But I agree with Blake that I've always said, and I said a few weeks ago on the podcast, that you take promotion when it comes. You can't be picky about when you get promoted. There's no bad time to get promoted. But there is definitely a benefit of Warren having a summer in this division to build a, start building a team he wants to build. We've got the recruitment director in place now. We've got Paul Warren in place. You know, he'll know which of the players in the current squad he wants to keep and which ones maybe he's happy to move on. And it'll be interesting to see, you know, what those decisions are in the summer. And I think what the club and the fans could hold on to is that that long unbeaten run and that winning streak just a few months ago, because that's what's possible with Paul Warren in charge with the right kind of squad. And I think it probably is, you know, size of squad, some players maybe not fully suiting the style of play, and it just has been a very bit unbalanced. You know, we've got no real fullbacks in that squad. We've got no wing backs in that squad. So I'm trying to stay positive for the medium to long term. The short term, I think we'll continue limping towards the end of the season. I still think we could sneak sixth, but I don't think we'll do anything if we got to the playoffs with the squad and the shape it's in.
Yeah, I think I agree. I guess we all got swept up in it at the time in the unbeaten run, and it was so much fun. It was great, like the wins and the goals and the way we won games and the streak we won on. But like, if you actually look at it in the cold light of day, and part of the problem is that we've just shipped so many goals recently. Like that run was built on a really solid defence, which, as we've said before, was based on a midfielder at right back, a 34-year-old left back at centre back, a young defender in his second season as a pro as the other centre back, and a number 10 as the left back. Like, it shouldn't have made sense. That back four shouldn't have won as many games and kept as many clean sheets as they did. It shouldn't have worked, but it did. And maybe this run that we're on now is just us finding our level. But just to come back to something that you said there, I completely agree. You can't judge Warren in any way seriously until he's had at least a preseason, because, like, yeah, people talk about him being like, he's just a fitness coach. Like, yeah, he is. That's one of his major strengths. And like, seasons and bases of fitness are built around preseason. We've got to give him a preseason. Or everyone that's spoken to and works with Warren has talked about his preseason. So that has to be the starting point for any sort of serious long-term judgment about his time at Derby. So I can't even entertain any chat about his suitability for the job right now, because he hasn't even been really given a proper chance.
Yeah, I'd like to think there isn't any serious chat about people questioning Paul Warren or his plays at Derby. I think, yeah, he's absolutely guaranteed, in my book, at least another year in this job and a chance this summer to really shape the squad and drain the squad, as you say. And I think it's important to remember that this is his second job, right? So Rotherham was his first job and he did an absolutely incredible job there. So not only is joining, you know, midway through the season a bit new to him, I think he joined at the end of a season in Championship at Rotherham, but joining, you know, kind of at the start, midway through a season, you know, is new to him, and a completely different club and completely different surroundings of a whole squad that isn't his. So I think whatever he could have got out of this squad was a bonus in my eyes, and he almost gave us that incredible journey this season. I think he'll have a great season next season, and I'm looking forward to that. I just think it'd be nice to try and salvage something from the season and finish it on somewhat of a positive note.
Yeah, I think it's such a genuine handicap, like coming into a club like partway through a season. It's almost like sort of running, you know, attempting to win a race, like a 400 meter race, after having like a 3 or 4 second light handicap at the start or something. It's just really difficult to judge him on that. But that we were unbeaten, as we said, over the Easter weekend, not all doom and gloom. And well, Kutch and Blake, we had a frankly tropical, balmy, terrific trip to Forest Green on Friday. Sort of glanced over at you, Blake, in the first half, in the luxury of the little mini terrace down the side there. Look, you've been to every away game this season. I'm assuming that Forest Green is going to live long in the memory, just because it's just quite an odd place to watch football, really, isn't it?
Yeah, it's it was a very strange day. On the journey home, me and the group that we travel with, we were saying it was just such a strange day. It was pretty much, well, in my head anyway, game over after 34 seconds, and it kind of descended into a pre-season friendly type feel from then on. the ground itself, I mean, I saw you stood on the terrace. You looked very uncomfortable, Chris, kind of clambered and holding onto a railing, trying to grab a view of the action. And then pointed out, obviously, Kutch behind enemy lines, for a change. He's getting brave, aren't you, Kutch? But just a really, really strange, not necessarily strange in a bad way, by the way. This isn't a dig at Forest Green, but to give a paint the picture for people who haven't been to Forest Green, it's like arriving in the middle of the Peak District. There's nothing there, and then there's a football ground. And yeah, it's a very weird place. I think it's the smallest stand I've ever watched Derby County in. I mean, I was in like a small seated area that had two rows of 50 seats. So I was lucky enough to see most of the action. But judging by the people that were sitting on fences and clambering around, I don't think the view was the greatest from the terrace, was it?
No, it really wasn't. It was it was bizarre for many reasons. But basically, like when me and Tom queued up for the away end at, like, I don't know, about sort of 2:47 or 2:45, 2:50. Like, it was already full, but there were still like about 200 Derby fans trying to get in. So we eventually got in to like that side stand that's like most 90% terrace. And when we got in, I put my ticket through the thing as I heard a cheer, and that was Derby winning the penalty. And me and Tom got in, and we managed to sort of peer over someone's shoulder at the back to see Collins convert the pen. And then we sort of went down the back to try and actually get a space to watch the rest of the first half. And I ended up like with one foot on a concrete stair and then like hanging on with one arm to like a bright green neon barrier. And then my other leg was just sort of like dangling in midair, really. It was a very strange experience, and not one I'd ever think I'll get in any other League One ground or ground I'll ever go to in the future. Quite reminiscent of Yeovil. That was the only comparison I think I had from about 10 years ago when me and Tom went to Yeovil when they had one season in the Championship. But yeah, Kutch, I'm starting to think you actually like it more in the home end. You're getting quite cosy and you don't seem to really like mixing it with a Derby fan so much more, do you?
Well, I've got 100% win record this season. Two home ends, two wins on the road. So, yeah, I was actually sat with my mum and dad and my uncle, who kind of go to Forest Green semi-regularly as they live just a short drive down the road. But I think, look, it's a beautiful part of the world. As you say, you know, we walked back, lovely walk down past, you know, country roads to a craft brewery about 20 minutes from the ground post-game, which was great. If you were watching on Rams TV, if you saw someone in a bright yellow jumper by the corner flag we were attacking in the second half, waving from the second row, that was me. I kept waving whenever the camera was pointed towards that side. I know Anton spotted me, and I think you boys spotted me halfway through the first half. But looking at the away end, because I was opposite the away end, you know, what was a real problem with that ground is that away end it's so spread out thin, right? There's probably like, what is it, 5 or 6 deep row-wise. So although the Derby fans were singing, the singers are all so spread out across. It never really got a great deal of sound going. So it's kind of an odd atmosphere. But again, a bit like Oxford, you know, it was a much more friendly place to be behind enemy lines, so to speak, than Oxford. But there was quite a few Derby fans in all three, I think, of the home stands. There's a few Derby fans sat behind me. And there's a few Derby fans in that goal Derby was shooting towards in the second half as well. So it was a really fun day out. It wasn't a great game. It was a very, very comfortable win for Derby, as Blake said. It was kind of quite obviously over after that first goal goes in. But it was a nice away day, and it was nice to spend the weekend with the Steve Bloomers Washing boys and families.
Yeah. Very, genteel is the word I'd use to describe the atmosphere in the away end. It was oddly polite in a way that was a little bit disconcerting. But it's a new month, of course, so that does mean that there's a new bonus podcast for members of the Steve Bloomers Washing Patreon channel. And for our April offering, we've done another away days special, recorded on the open air terrace at Forest Green Rovers on Good Friday. So you can hear the full podcast by signing up for just the price of a coffee per month and get loads of other benefits as well over at patreon.com/Steve Bloomers Washing. But here is a little taster. 2-0. Tom, yeah. Talk me through what the actual fuck happened there. Like, absolutely worst goal we've scored all season. by a mile, but it's the goal we needed, wasn't it, to kill it off?
It was a thing of beauty, Chris. A little bit of a press. Paul Screen went backwards and across their box. The goalkeeper's out of position. McGoldrick got the block in and it rolls into the back of the net. A thing of beauty.
Glorious. It will not win goal of the season, but who on earth cares? 2-0.
Hi, I'm Nathaniel Mendes-Lang and you're listening to Steve Bloomer's Washing.
It's Johnny Russell. Joe Ledley. Matej Vidra might yet open up for a shot for him. A storming start! Unbelievable! Seconds. Matej Vidra, a man who always makes a mark against Forest.
So, that's Forest Green and MK Dons then. It was interesting against MK Dons and Forest Green, actually, that we did shift to three at the back. James Chester was in there against Forest Green. Thought he did very well, although I didn't really have to do that much defending. I think he pulled up in the warm-up or just before the game against MK Dons, which was just, very disappointing. And I know that some fans do say that he's a bit injury-prone, and it's a real shame that we can't seem to get him into a run of minutes in a Derby shirt. But against MK, it was Rooney, Jake Rooney, Aaron Cashin and Hayden Roberts. Although it's sort of weird, isn't it, Kutch? Because it's not really like a back three a lot of the time, because Corey Smith does drop in and it's quite like fluid when Roberts goes forward. But look, we were clearly shipping too many goals when that made Warne go back to this in the first place. Like, he started with three at the back, then went to a four on the run, and then that run ended and it all went wrong, and now he's gone back to three. So I guess we've just tried to negate conceding so many goals by offering that support for the centre backs, with Smith screening and protecting. But is it going to be here to stay to the end of the season, do you think? Like, is this how we're going to set up in all games, or were we just trying to like match up some relatively like limited opposition over the Easter weekend?
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see. I'm not entirely sure. Maybe he's doing it with one eye towards next season and seeing, well, which of these players do suit that system. You know, can Mendes-Lang be an effective right wing back? Can Barkhuizen be an effective left wing back? What's Jake Rooney like at right centre back? Maybe he's got one eye on next season if that's the way he wants to go. I know what you mean about Corey Smith. It does kind of sometimes look like a back four, because he kind of drops into that centre back position when Roberts and or Rooney goes forward. I thought Roberts was brilliant today. I think Hayden Roberts has had a few good games in a row now, and I thought he was kind of the most comfortable, you know, stepping out from the back and into the midfield and almost beyond them at times. I'd like to see Mendes-Lang still be further forward, you know, in that position. If Rooney's maybe not going to kind of step forward as much as Roberts, if Corey Smith slides across, I think Mendes-Lang can start a bit higher up. I just think he has too much to do when he's receiving it almost in his own half or on the halfway line. So I'm not convinced you get the best. Well, you definitely don't get the best out of Mendes-Lang in that position. I still would like to see Mendes-Lang play up in that front too. I don't think McGoldrick and Collins particularly works in the tougher games together. I wouldn't mind seeing him play much, much further forward and kind of play a free role across, trying to find space on either wing. But I think 3-5-2 possibly is here to stay. He's got the midfielders for it. And I think he's maybe, I think if Chester's fit, that's another good option at right centre back. It's just, for me, it's just not getting the best out of our wide players. But that's something he could rectify in the summer.
Yeah, I guess you saw some of the limitations of it in a way of three at the back in the goal we conceded, really, Blake, against MK. Like, sort of caught on the break, and you got to be honest, Mendes-Lang doesn't really do enough defensively to stop the MK Dons player, because he's not a defender. It's not his job. It's not what he trains his whole career to do. So yes, it offers you more bodies in midfield, but you can sometimes look a bit stretched at the back, can't you? Like, do you think, I mean, could Warne change again before the end of the season, go back to a four before in the last remaining five games?
I think potentially he could go back to the flat back four. I was in the yard, the pub at Pride Park after the game, and there was some of the Derby County staff in there, and it was referred to as playing false fives. And that's really interesting that it's referred to as that different people are basically dropping into playing those in those three roles. Obviously, like the famous false nine of not having a striker, we didn't really have a number five. We had different people dropping in and playing there, which I don't think I've ever seen the like of a system like that, where different people are kind of dropping in and taking responsibility for the centre half position. Did that cost us on the break today? Yeah, I think it might have done with the manner of how we conceded the equaliser. I do think it's a case of, we've spoken about the limitations that Warne's got with the squad, and he's trying different things to get the best out of what he's got, and sometimes it's not going to quite work. I think I'd like to see four at the back, I think, particularly at home. I think if you go away to the next couple of games you've got coming up, if you go 3/5 at the back for those and try and go on the counter-attack and nick a goal, and then you've got three at the back while you're going forward, and five at the back when you're defending, that makes a bit more sense to me than maybe having three at the back at home. It is a difficult one. Curtis Davis is come in and out of the side. Chester injured again. And I thought he was a revelation at Forest Green. I think he was a really calming influence, and you could tell his experience. I thought he was shooing for maybe man of the match for Derby at Forest Green. So that was obviously disappointing to lose Chester. Did that affect Warne's decision? Did he change it because of that? I don't know. Maybe, maybe not. But for me, I particularly at home, I would like to see a flat back four. And as Kutch said, get Mendes Lang up in there in the mix, where he can really start to affect games and beat people, get to the byline and create some chances.
Yeah, with Chester, I guess it was said that he tightened up before the game, and I think there's a certain element of just wanting to keep him, wrap him in cotton wool, really, and keep him fresh. And I don't even know if he was properly injured. I think maybe it was just like a precaution, and he wasn't played, and he just wasn't risked, because I guess you'd rather just miss him for this game, and then maybe try and have him back in for the remaining five. But in terms of the summer and Warne's targets, I guess we'll get a real feel for the shape that he wants through the targets that he goes for. Like, you know, if he goes for a right wing back, it's clear he maybe wants to go for the three, or maybe he goes for like a more traditional right back. I know there's not a huge amount of difference in those positions, but does that mean that he is willing to go to more of a flat four? So it'll be really interesting to see like the early recruits that he does make in the summer, depending on what division we're in, and how that's going to factor like the shape that we go for in the seasons and the games ahead, Kutch.
Yeah, I'm really excited for the summer. You know, I am really excited for summer because we have got a coach who knows his division inside out, and we've got a head of recruitment who knows his division inside out. They're going to know exactly what they want. They're going to know what players are available. And Derby should have first pick in the draft, so to speak. You know, this is a league where there's a lot of free agents. There's going to be lots of good quality players who are out of contract in the summer, because that's how League One and League Two operates. Most people on 1 year, 2 year contracts, 3 year contracts are very rare. So you kind of have your pick. Like, I'll give you an example of Forest Green. The reason Forest Green are so rubbish this season is because they won, I don't know if they won League Two, but they were comfortably in the top three of League Two last season. They lost their coach and they lost half of their squad, mostly to Championship clubs, because they're all out of contract. And so Derby will have their pick of the top players in League Two and the players, some of the better players in League One. And they would already line up those transfers now. So I'm really excited. I think it'll be obvious quite quickly, Chris, as you said. Is it right wing back or is it a right back? If we get a couple of wing backs in, we know we're going to be going 3-5-2. So I'm quite excited. I don't know enough about League One to know which of those players are or who I think we should go and get. But I think we'll be excited when we start seeing the names in the summer and we look at how they performed in recent seasons. I think we'll be getting some of the better players in League One, or the really up and coming players from League Two, or from maybe from Scotland or from other divisions. So I think it'll be another exciting summer. And I think that squad will take shape pretty quickly, because what is quite clear is that David Clowes is putting the structure in place around Paul Warne to make that happen.
Yeah, and that's clear with the recruitment of the recruiter, Mark. I want to say Mark Thomas from Oxford, who was clearly a key get for Clowes in recent weeks. Just to finish off for this episode, I don't really like talking about refs, but it keeps coming up week after week after week, and it's just one that really winds fans up and does divide fan bases a bit. And also, it's something that doesn't just happen to Derby. Like, you know, we haven't podcasted since the game against Ipswich. Derby lost 2-0, which was another big blow in the promotion hopes, and really sort of set, really showed the gulf a bit between those top three or four, Plymouth, Wednesday, Ipswich and Barnsley, and the chasing pack. But Derby did still have a goal disallowed at 1-0, I think. Erin Cashin's header being ruled out, not for any discernible reason I could really see. I think the official reason was a foul on the keeper. I couldn't see one. There was just a little bit of minor jostling between him and McGoldrick. But it did raise more questions about officials getting too many of the big calls wrong this season. And it, as I said, it's not just us. Like, Barnsley had that absolute howler denied at the Pirelli when John Brayford quite clearly handled it on the line against Burton in a game that they didn't win. And Sheffield Wednesday conceding that utterly bizarre penalty at Oxford on Friday as well. I don't really know what the answer is here, Blake, but what do you even attempt to do about it? I mean, is VAR even a realistic option in the Football League? Like, is the infrastructure even there to roll out a system where you've got eyes on every game in the Football League every week, week in and week out? It doesn't really seem feasible to me. Or do we just have to accept that the inconsistency and, you know, the inconsistency will happen, and you have to hope that, as the cliche goes, these things level themselves out over the season?
The frustrating thing for me is the manner of some of the decisions. I mean, there's none from today that particularly rankle. I think we may have been unlucky with Jason Knight going through on goal, maybe, potentially been a bit soft. But when you hear the explanation from the referee from the Ipswich game, when he says the linesman said to him on his headset, you've got McGoldrick has got eyes on the goalkeeper, and he misinterpreted that as McGoldrick has got his hands on the goalkeeper and therefore gives a foul. It's pretty unacceptable, isn't it? That
it's embarrassing, isn't it? Absolutely, it's an absolute farce.
Just have a chat. What happened to it? I mean, it used to be the common thing that a linesman would, or a referee would, go over to a linesman, have a chat. Sorry, what did you say there? Oh, I said he's got his eyes on him. Sorry, I thought you said that. Right, goal given. I don't understand why it's so hard and there's apologies. I mean, how can you apologise on the pitch as the referee at Plymouth when you've not even seen it back? So you know straight away you've given it wrong. If you know you've got the decision wrong on the pitch, why are you giving the decision? So that's the real frustration, is the manner of it. And it's a bit of an old cliche, and I know it gets said a lot on social media, but I really do believe that referees should be held to account to a certain degree and have to come out and say, why was that goal disallowed? Because from what I believe, the linesman apologised to Paul Warne or to the Derby squad last Saturday, but then wouldn't be drawn on what he'd seen. So what's the point of the apology if you're not going to kind of give an explanation? So maybe holding them to account a little bit more. I'm not sure. It's very frustrating.
What's most frustrating is when they give things which haven't happened. So, for example, the, you know, phantom push on the goalkeeper or the foul on the Plymouth player. Like, if a referee misses something, I think that's more excusable than a referee giving something because they've guessed, they've imagined something happening, or there's miscommunication between the linesman and the referee in the case of the Ipswich goal, as Blake outlined there. Like, I think you can forgive a referee for missing something because they weren't looking at that moment. You know, they weren't looking in the right place at the right moment. That's kind of an honest mistake. But when a referee gives something which hasn't happened, and then they apologise because it was a communication issue or whatever, that's kind of unacceptable. And I don't know, as Blake says, you know, I think there's obviously a much bigger problem with refereeing in this country. VAR isn't necessarily the fix of it, because we've seen huge mistakes being made just this weekend gone and other weekends in the Premier League with VAR. The application of VAR is very poor. I wouldn't want it in the Football League currently. I'm not against technology, but the people operating the technology have to know what they're doing. And currently there obviously isn't the depth of officiating in this country to support it. And I wonder if actually VAR in the Premier League is hurting the Football League, because actually you're pulling more of the supposedly better refs, although Premier League fans wouldn't think they're great. You're pulling more refs up to the top to operate VAR, and then you're even more down to bare bones of officiating in the Football League as a result of that. So I think the whole refereeing pyramid, shall we say, is a shambles and is not up to standard, and it's stretched more than ever before. I think it's probably a long-term fix. I don't know how you fix refereeing in this country, but Derby and every other team are currently victims of crap refereeing.
Yeah, well, it's not an issue that Derby can do much about, unfortunately, and even though it has affected us, the bottom line is we've got to dig in. We've got to show character. We've got to try and shake off the current woes that have beset us and just do something to get enough points to keep ourselves in contention to make something for the rest of the season. But we will return on Steve Bloomer's Washing in a couple of weeks after the Burton Albion game, I think. I'll be in your way end at Bristol Rovers. Blake, see you there, I assume, keeping up the your quite incredible run of away games.
Yes, I'll be there. Bristol Rovers and Exeter. Potentially a few days somewhere in the southwest in between as well. So, yeah, really looking forward to that. And hopefully 6 points and back to sixth in the league.
There was a slight resignation in your voice when you said, yes, I'll be there. Almost as if you're not quite... haven't quite got as much faith in this, in your decision to go to every game this season, but fair play to you as always. Kutch, pleasure to have your company as usual.
Yes, very good. Thanks for a lovely weekend, Chris.
And thank you too. So don't forget to give us a follow on social media at Steve Bloomer Pod, and we're on Facebook and Instagram as well in between games. And as I said, get all those extra bits of content from us over on patreon.com/Steve Bloomer's Washing, and see you next time.